This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Republicans won a narrow victory in North Carolina's 9th Congressional District last night. Republican Dan Bishop beat out Democrat Dan McCready. The special election was closely watched across the country and is considered by many analysts to be a bellwether for the 2020 election. But what was the message? Also last night, Republican Dr. Greg Murphy won in North Carolina's 3rd congressional district, stepping into the seat of Representative Walter Jones, who passed away in February. We'll hear about those two special elections, but first, news this morning out of Raleigh that the North Carolina House pulled a surprise move and took a vote without most Democrats present to override Governor Roy Cooper's veto of the state budget. Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff DeBerry joins us now. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Frank.
What happened this morning?
Well, a lot of Democrats did not expect there to be votes during the 8:30 session, so they were not there. About half of the members of the 120 legislators in the North Carolina House were not there. Very quickly, the speaker, and I, just full disclosure, was not in the building. I was out covering that third district you mentioned a minute ago. I was heading back in. The speaker called for the override of the gubernatorial veto of the budget. One of the House lawmakers, a Democrat from New Hanover County, Deb Butler, was incensed pretty much instantly, grabbed for her mic. She was cut off by the speaker. She then went to several other microphones. There was a moment where the sergeant at arms approached her, tried to keep her from talking. Then he motioned to a police officer, and it appeared as though for a moment this state legislator was going to be in trouble with law enforcement, which we can get to at another point.
Wow, one of the few Democrats in there, and they're silencing her. They won't turn on her mic, and they're going to arrest her.
They took the vote. They took the override vote very quickly. It was a 55-9 vote. For context, again, there are 120 members of the House, so most people were not there. Some Democrats who were in the chamber, I'm told, because again, I wasn't there, some Democrats who were in the chamber were not even able to get back to their seats to cast the vote because they didn't think votes were coming.
Tell me more about this. You say they weren't expecting a vote. Why do you expect or not expect a vote? Look, the House is open. The floor is there. Go to work.
So sometimes from a scheduling or a process standpoint, at the end of a day, say on a Tuesday, we will hear the speaker or whoever is presiding over the chamber from the dais say, no scheduled votes tomorrow, or we won't have votes in the morning. We may have votes or planned votes in the afternoon. Now, that did not happen yesterday, at least openly and explicitly. Then there are the back channel communications. We reporters get those when we're on the floor of the North Carolina House. We get those from some of the leadership folks, and we'll say, hey, are we going to have votes tomorrow? Is this vote coming up? It's for planning purposes, right? The understanding, and this is per Darren Jackson, who's the Democratic leader in the North Carolina House from Wake County. He had a conversation with David Lewis. He is the Republican rules chair in the North Carolina House. Lewis, the Republican, told Jackson yesterday that there weren't going to be votes in the morning. So Jackson, the Democrat, relayed that to his fellow Democrats. And that's why, according to him, there were not Democrats there today. So the vote happened. It happened quickly. There, as you can imagine, has been outrage. Again, I mentioned Butler, the Democratic lawmaker who was incensed on the floor. Governor Cooper is speaking right now. He may have wrapped up, but he, among other comments, has called this the most deceptive trick yet.
Yeah, and according to Lauren Horsch of the News and Observer on Twitter, Governor Cooper calls this an assault on our democracy. This 9/11, why do they hate our democracy? And others are incensed. Is there anything they can do? I guess it goes to the Senate now, but the Senate is less veto-proof than
That's a good way to put it. Less veto-proof. It's a 29-21 margin. Republicans, if everybody is... The way to do an override in our state legislature is you need 3/5 of the members present. So if all 50 state senators are there, you need 30, meaning you need one Democrat to defect. However, if a couple Democrats aren't there, either because they take a walk, we say that with air quotations, or if they have a scheduling conflict, all of a sudden the numbers are fluid is the short of it.
Well, and now we know they'll use any means necessary to get the vote. So as one Democrat said, how can we ever trust them again? So fascinating. Now, this may well be highly unethical, but it's probably legal, right? So there's no real legal challenge, or will there be?
That's a good question. I'm not an attorney. If there was something that was said on the record, or if this is an email correspondence or written down somewhere, it is conceivable that there perhaps could be a pursuit of some sort of legal challenge here. But I would be a little bit surprised if that's a next step in this saga.
All right. Our Capitol Bureau Chief, Jeff DeBerry. Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome.
Let's talk about that special election in the 9th Congressional District. Rusty Jacobs joins us now, our politics reporter. Rusty, a lot of people paying attention to this race.
Clearly. And the results were not a surprise in one very respect, to talking about the 9th District, of course, in that it was a close race. Both Republicans and Democrats in the home stretch for a long time knew this was going to be a close race. The Democrats are probably seeing some positive aspects to a defeat. There's only a 2% margin, as you said, in a district that historically has been a Republican stronghold, and on the Republican side, breathing a sigh of relief.
Yeah, but talk more about that, because as you say, we've been watching the polls, and anybody who's been paying attention to the polls would not be surprised that it was going to be a close race. And if you know that this has been in the hands of this district has been in the hands of Republicans since 1960, you wouldn't be surprised to see the Republican win. But the big surprise is the 10-point loss in terms of the differential, I should say. You know, here Donald Trump takes this by 12 points in 2016. 4 years earlier, Mitt Romney takes it by 12 points. And now there's a 2-point margin. And remember, they spent a lot of money on this one, right?
They did. They did. You know, each candidate raising several million dollars on their own, and lots of money coming in both from the right and the left in terms of interest ads. President Trump was a presence in this election from the very beginning of this new, this redo, this do-over election. Dan Bishop, the Republican, made no secret of the fact that he was running as a Trump Republican. He came out in ads saying, I am going to help build the President Trump's wall on the southern border. I will protect gun rights. He will do everything he could to get the president's agenda realized from his position as a congressman. He stuck with that message, do or die. Dan McCready, on the other hand, ran as centrist a campaign as you can in this day and age where there are demonized progressive Democrats, AOC in the Congress, Maxine Waters. Bishop tried without letting up to lump McCready in with those. McCready, you could barely ever hear him talk about being a Democrat. He talked about being a Marine. This is an Iraq War veteran, served with the U.S. Marines, probably got a lot of support from moderates and from centrists and maybe even those unaffiliateds in the district. But no matter what, Bishop kept hitting at him, calling him a member of this progressive wing.
So what do we take away from this? Do we have to sort of drill down and see where McCready and Bishop were strong? McCready was very strong in the suburbs, which has been a concern, a growing concern for Republicans.
Both of the candidates from the Charlotte area and Bishop did not win. McCready, as you said, won the Charlotte area, the Mecklenburg part of that county, which is part of the 9th district. He also won some parts, Robeson County. He split the 8 counties of the district with Dan Bishop. What can you take from it? His centrist message, you can see it as having gotten him that close to a victory, or others might say, well, gee, maybe if he was really sticking with the progressive wing, he would have jumped that chasm. Probably not. I mean, that centrist message clearly played well in that district.
Well, I mean, I think if you're looking at 2020 and you're trying to draw lessons from this, what the Democrats think they must do is try to figure out ways to win back some of those areas that had gone red and that had become conservative, and maybe that centrist message. Again, if you look at a 10-point differential here, that might be a win.
And that's where the Democrats are looking to take some solace in the outcome here, even if some believe that McCready might actually edge Bishop out. In the end, they can say, look, the narrowing, if this gap, means North Carolina is in play come 2020.
Yeah, and remember, on the legislative side, too, that's a whole other story. This is a congressional map, and we're talking about a congressional election at the national level, but redrawn legislative maps and perhaps renewed and greater interest among progressives. Going to be an interesting race, but that really brings me to my next question. Were we paying too much attention to this? I mean, here is a fraud-tainted district. It's why we're doing it. So that, it seems to me, may skew the outcome, the sense that the Republican is charged with and great evidence of fraud. In the previous election, and it's a special election. Not as many people turn out.
Well, that's absolutely true, and I'm glad you brought that up. The voter turnout was low, and remember, the early voting period for this election, this special election, was, if not curtailed, it was disrupted by Hurricane Dorian. So some precincts, early voting was suspended. Early voting, convention says, benefits Democrats. Might have given Dan McCready a few more votes. Probably wouldn't have made up the difference, but as important, it is an important election to watch because it is the result, or it is the do-over for that ballot fraud, ballot tampering scandal. So you actually have to watch it, and I think you have to watch it for all the themes you touched on. Centrist Democrat running against a really arch conservative Republican sponsor of the transgender bathroom bill that would dictate where transgender people could use public facilities. So an important election and an interesting outcome.
And now one that we paid less attention to nationally, but of course an important one because every election counts. The 3rd District Republican State Representative Republican Greg Murphy, I should say, came out on top against Alan Thomas and Libertarian Tim Harris. So talk a little bit about that race. The fact is, there all of our expectations were met.
Right. Walter Jones had held that seat for more than 20 years. He was interesting in his own right. Sometimes Walter Jones, a Republican seen as a maverick, known for asking the House of Representatives or the congressional cafeterias to serve freedom fries in the aftermath of 9/11. So Greg Murphy was appointed to the North Carolina legislature in 2015. He's a physician, actually supports the idea of some Medicaid expansion, he got a seat that was destined to be a Republican seat. So where it goes from now, we'll see. But he'll take that. And it was a margin that was expected to be wide, and it was a wide margin of victory.
Rusty Jacobs, WNC Politics reporter. Thank you, Rusty.
You're welcome.